Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're in chapter 15, verse 25. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, we keep going back and forth. The Jewish people have divided. And so it's almost like you got to keep changing the channel between one side and the other. It gets confusing, but part of the concept is that we're all one. When we received the Torah, we said, Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do and we will listen. Part of what was unique was we kind of joined together one another. We're all one people. And sometimes it forces us to be on different channels. And there's an idea, sometimes we get comfortable with our own little synagogue or our own little group of friends, and we still have to turn to the main channel and see, well, what's going on in Israel, what's going on with the wider community, and because we're all the same people, and our destiny is together. And in a certain way, that's what happens in the Book of Kings. Through a certain, you know, tragedy, the different personal views and different ways of seeing things, we split up, and we started worshiping differently. But we were still one people. And so it's confusing, as life today is confusing, but we still have to be concerned with what happens in the wider world and what happens around us. And so I kind of see it in that way. Asa was the one that we learned about. He was a good king. I always like, you know, studying the good kings. There's so many, you know, there are a few rotten apples that we have to go through. Power corrupts. And when you have someone that does something well, so it's reassuring. One of the things that often happens is that even when somebody's good, it's difficult that everything they do should be good. We mentioned that Asa, one of the reasons that his feet, he had feet trouble, was that when they lifted the siege, he drafted the entire country. What happened was that they tried to do a boycott of the country, to do a not a boycott, they cut them off from, they tried to do a siege around Yerushalayim. And in order to break up the siege, there were huge walls and building material that were there. And he said that everybody, no matter what, he closed all the schools and all the yeshivas, and everybody has to grab a stone. And so when he did that, it says that he even he was punished for closing down the yeshivas and the schools at that time. That's why his feet were, he should have realized that the real protection for the reason why we were saved was because of the merit of the good things that were happening. And so to close down the schools was not the right the right thing to do. We mentioned that the dilemma with Asa was that some people were critical that he bribed a Gentile army to attack the Jewish army to get them off his back. We mentioned that this happened in the times of the Hashmonaim, where they brought the Romans in. One brother brought the Romans in to help his side against his brother. And the problem was, once the Romans came over, they never left. And eventually they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. It's a challenge to know when you're supposed to fight and try other means, and when, as a they felt that they had to lift the siege, when it was appropriate. He took all the treasures and all the possessions and used them to bribe Aram to attack the 10 tribes. So, but with that said, whether or not he used the best judgment in that particular case, he tried to get rid of evil, and he was willing to take it, we said, even to his grandmother. She had her favorite idol. And we said that a lot of times people are willing to do things to other people, but with their own family, they don't oversee them, and they don't supervise them properly, or they put the needs of their family before that of the country. And he was not like that. He was willing to do what was right, even if it meant taking away his grandma's idol, her pet idol, whatever that was. We mentioned also the idea that they had the royal mother, that that was a tradition of the house of Yehuda going back to Rus, that next to the throne was the mother of the king, or the grandmother, and she was the boss of the country. You didn't mess with her. She set the tone, and she would set the king straight. And we talked about that Shlomo, King Solomon, when he started out, there was a time that he was a little bit wild, and his mother had him tied to a post and flogged him and said, "Listen here, you got to behave." She said, "Everybody knows your father's a righteous man, and if you misbehave, they're going to blame it on me." And she said, "You got to stop, you know." He straightened out, at least when his mother Bathsheba, and so we have this tradition of having a very the king's mother having a very powerful role in the running of the country. We'll see later on there was one of the king's mothers that just assassinated all the kings and said, "I'm running the country anyways, what do I need all these men for?" And she got rid of them. But there was this role, and it would have been very hard for him to get rid of the idol of his grandmother, but he was willing to do that. And that shows, you know, if a person is really, it's easy to get rid of other people's idols, but even within his own household, he was willing to throw away the idols, so that was a good thing. And so that was the story of Asa. We mentioned that there's another book in Divrei Hayamim where it describes other things that he did. There were different wars that went on and different, but each book has its purpose or its function. So that's where we kind of left off with the death of King Asa on verse 24. And now we go back to the other side. On the other side, there were some evil kings that lived a very short time, and we really just mention them because they're in the chain. And so that we mentioned the one over here, 25, Nadab ben Yeravam. Now, Yeravam was the one that started off the kingdom of the 10 tribes. And he started off with great promise. He was willing to attack Shlomo for the excesses that Shlomo had done. You remember, Shlomo's taxes were too high, and Shlomo had used up the open space in Yerushalayim for all of his wives. And he was willing to challenge him, but once he came to power, he abused the power. And again, this is a common thread throughout history, that it's very easy to pick on the incumbent, but how will you do when you're in that position? And so Yeravam blew it. And he was given many chances. And now he has a son, and the son does no better. Nadav ben Yeravam, Malach Yisrael, Bishna Shtaim La'asa Melech Yehuda, and his name was Nadav. The name Nadav is a nice, the word Nadav in Hebrew means to donate, or to give. It's like what we call a Nadava is a donation. That's the word Nadav. I think today it's relatively a common name. You have that name Nadav. He was king for 2 years, but there was nothing remarkable about him. He did evil in the eyes of Hashem. Now, he really didn't do anything special. He just continued what his father had done. But it's almost like if a person's parent is an alcoholic, and they see what it's like having a parent who's an alcoholic, and then they go and do the same thing. And you know, having grown up with that and knowing what it felt like having, you know, so how can you go and repeat the same thing? And that's exactly what happened here. In other words, his evil was that he did exactly what his father did, and because he saw it, he should have known how bad it was. So he went in the ways of his father, Ashkenaz Yisrael. And when a person is king, he has the opportunity to fix things and to change things, and he repeated the evil of his father, and that's not the purpose. That's what a person is put in the world, to improve the world. And if a person sees something wrong, then they should fix it. And so fortunately Nadav didn't do that, and he was he went in the line of his father. And 27, Bikshar lo Basha ben Achia le Beis Yisachar, and along comes Basha. It's interesting that the 10 tribes, even though the monarchy started from the tribe of Yosef, once that didn't work out, or once they decided the other tribes, different tribes, we'll see, will come to the forefront. And this time a king named Basha comes along, a person named Basha, and he's from the tribe of Yekeu Basha Begiva Asher Leplishtim Unod Bekoisir Samar Givon. So he did a surprise attack. In other words, the Nadav were the king was out on a campaign and to attack a place called Gibson, the Plishtim. We've always had trouble from the Plishtim. In other words, that's almost like take it for granted. The fact that the Philistines or the Palestinians are going to be trouble and we'll have to deal with it, that's just part of history. It's even then, there was a constant... the discussion was whether they had trouble from Egypt or Syria, but the Palestinians was a constant throughout Tanakh, which is just so interesting. Today, the Palestinians are not Palestinians. They took on the name Palestinian. And the Egyptians are really not Egyptians. There's another people that was settled there. But it's just almost today's headlines are the same headlines as they have in Tanakh. And it's just fascinating. You know, we're living in Israel. There are Jews living in Israel. And this constant thorn in our side are the Palestinians. And then every now and then we have trouble with Aram, which is Syria, and with the... every now and then the Persians get in the act too, and so it's just a history repeats itself. But while he was fighting against the Plishtim, and kind of the army there, they were busy with this campaign on Gibson. He killed Nadav, and with that, let's see, 29. Vayihi Kamalko, when he took over the kingdom, he eskol bezi ravim. He didn't just assassinate the king, but he got rid of the entire house of Yeravim. Yeravim was had a brief chance of leadership. Now, in a certain way, it could be Yeravim himself got corrupted, but maybe his family could redeem him. Maybe there were those in his household who could have fixed, and there was a small chance. His son was there, and he just continued. He was more of the father, and so that was it. We're done with them. And so even after the father, who was the originator, the father who just couldn't bring himself to deal with the house of Yehuda, but now the son was in charge, and he was just as bad. So now that whole house was wiped out. Lohisha called the Shem of the Yeravim. There was not a single soul left. And this was really the prophecy that Achiah HaShiloni had said. If you remember, when Yeravim's son was sick and the wife went to Achiah and disguised herself, the prophet said, look, you know, Yeravim, you have a chance, and you don't fix things, then... And again, Yeravim did what he did because he wanted to preserve his monarchy, because he felt that if I don't do this, the people will go back to serve the king of Yehuda. And the irony was that guaranteed that he would destroy his monarchy. Again, which you see that happening today, like you see that happening with these Arab kings. Sometimes they're very violent because they assume that's the only way to preserve their monarchy, and then in the end, that's what destroys their monarchy. He wanted to preserve his monarchy, and he took people away from Hashem, and Hashem said, "That's it, your monarchy is not worthy of surviving." What was the reason that Yeravim's monarchy was wiped out? One of the things that we don't talk about is something we don't realize, and that is that at the same time they weren't doing the right things as far as idol worship, as far as Judaism, some of these kings, especially the 10 tribes, were good people, meaning that they took care of the poor, they fed the hungry, they helped the country grow. It's almost like if you divided their personal lives from their, in other words, as far as the king, as far as waging war and as far as protecting the country, they weren't bad. But the fact that they led the people away from the Torah, that couldn't be forgiven. So if they were a bad king, if they were corrupt, if they did, none of the Jewish kings were, all of them were dedicated to their people, more or less. We'll see later in the times, the Second Temple, where the kings really, you know, Herod, those were really corrupt kings. But the kings, these kings, their sins had to do with idol worship and imitating the Gentiles. But the interesting thing was they cared for their countries. In other words, but here it says, verse 30, Al-Chata Shirab Mashiachata, he himself sinned, Vashahikdes Yisrael. And he caused the Jewish people to sin. An interesting thing is the word chet usually means that he didn't intend to do it. He didn't see where it would go. He was a very learned person when he started off, and at first he strayed. He thought that he had to set up an alternative religion. He had to set up his own synagogue, different than that of Yehuda. And Bekaso Asher Hikisis Hashem Elokei Yisrael. But he got Hashem angry. It's very interesting, that expression, how he got Hashem angry. So 31. You could read about this, his son and other things that happened. Those are in the history books. 32. And during Asa and Basha, again, the names are always funny because they sound almost the same. Asa and Basha, they had a war going on all the days. Now, this new king, Basha, the son of Achiah, I'll call Yisrael, Besirtza. The name of his capital city was Sirsa. Esrei v'arboim shan, 24 years. Now, let's see what the new king does. 34. V'yasara b'nei Hashem. He did evil in the eyes of Hashem. So here he was, the new improved. He came, he got rid of the old king, and it turned out that he was just more of the same. And we're going to see that Hashem is very angry with him, because if he killed the old king because of the old king was bad, and then he just repeated the same things. A person, it's like you take over a job, you bring someone new, and he says, "Well, I just did the same thing the person I replaced." Well, you were given the job to fix it up. But and he continued in that way. 16. What the word here, Hikdash Yisrael, means that the Jewish people were originally loyal to Hashem and loyal to the Torah, and by setting up these golden calves, and eventually setting up a different kind of religion, slowly the people got weaned away from Judaism and became more and more involved in idolatry. Idolatry allowed for multiple gods and statues and sacrifices, and we're going to see that it's kind of hard to imagine, because that was the basic concept of Judaism, was I am the Lord your God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And so how did it happen? But these kings slowly weaned the people away from Hashem. It didn't happen immediately, but it started a pattern. 16. Now, this new king was very brutal in destroying out Yeravam, and the fact that he was so brutal in wiping out that entire house, it brought the anger of Hashem, because he wiped him out, and then he went and did the exact same thing. I think that's what frustrates us about politics, is that every politician, they're against the corruption, they're against this, they're against that, and then they come to power, and it's the exact same, and the American people just votes them out. It's almost the same kind of pattern. But it's just hard to imagine people that see what's wrong in the system, and then when they come to power, many times they just repeat the same things, the same corruption, once they're there. Here, Basha destroyed the monarchy of Yeravam, and he was more of the same. So they were given a warning, and this was the all of the kings at that time, the prophets came to them, and they gave him the warning. V'idvar Hashem O Yehu ben Hanani. Al-Bash, the Yehu was the name of the Hashem came to Yehu, and he said, Yan Hashem Mosicha min Ofer. God said, I picked you up from the dust. You weren't anything special. Vetna Nagid Alam Yisrael, and I made you the boss. I made you the head. V'telech v'derech Yeravam. And instead, and now that you're the boss, you're just following in the ways of the wicked kings. V'tachtiyas Ami, and you're making my people sin. Laki Seni, and they're doing it to get me angry. It's so interesting that it uses this word, almost like they're doing it in spite or to get me angry. I don't know what sins they did that were... We have this expression in Judaism. There's a difference between somebody that sins out of passion and somebody that sins in spite. So, for example, if somebody can't help themselves and they sin, they really would like to do the right thing, but something came over them. And then there are other people that go out of their way to sin. They do it in spite. So that's called the lahachis, like somebody that's doing it to anger Hashem. They used to We don't have it so much in this country, but there used to be Yom Kippur balls, people that went out of their way. Couldn't they have a ball some other time of the year? No, they wanted to have it on Yom Kippur. They wanted to show that they were doing it in spite. They did it to anger Hashem, almost. Because now they fast half a day or whatever. They just do it like, it's like Judaism light, you know. They do a little bit, but it's a, but there was a time that they were in spite. There were certain people that did it in spite. They did it out of anger. So, you know, it's one thing if someone says, well, it's hard to fast. I know, hard to be in synagogue all day. I'm not up to it. All right. So they're not, they're not willing to sacrifice. They're not willing to push themselves. But it's another thing if they say, well, we're going to have a banquet and celebrate, you know, like that's lahakis. So describing Yeravim, it says lahakis, like they just did it out of anger. I don't know where the anger came from. But it mentions that over here. Verse 3. Hinani maver achre Basha. Now, because Basha was the reformer, and Basha got rid of the old king, and he was going to fix everything, and he didn't do that, so Hashem says, I'm getting rid of him too. Achre Beis and Sati is Beiska, and I'm going to do to him exactly what he did to Kebezi Ravim ben Nevat. And verse 4. Vamesla Basha b'ir yochla klovin. Those that die in the city will be eaten by the dogs. And meslo basada yochla ofa shemayim. One of the we have a very high respect for the human body. Like even you know, basic dignity is that we bury people. And it says over here that their punishment would be that the people would be so disgusted with them they wouldn't even give them a proper burial. They would be like eaten by the dogs and by the vultures. Verse 5, and that's the ultimate insult that the yester divrei Basha Basha also grosso Elohim ksuv masefi divrei yamim l'malchus Yisrael. And again, if you want to read about him, you can open the history books. But we don't want to deal with him. He was a bad guy, and he didn't. He repeated the sins that he had come to improve on. V'yishka Basha mevosav yikar b'tzirtzam yilk olo beno taktov. And so now he has a son named Elah. Verse 7. And the word of a prophecy came to Yehu. They did evil in Hashem's eyes to get him angry. But Masa Yadar Lios Kabezi Ravam Ba'ala Shehiko. So it's interesting. They're being punished for destroying Yeravim. Now, Yeravim, usually it would have been a mitzvah to destroy Yeravim. But they didn't destroy Yeravim because they wanted to do the mitzvah of getting rid of an evil person. He destroyed Yeravim because he wanted the power. We have a similar thing that we have a tradition that Esav killed Nimrod. And Nimrod was the one that had thrown Abraham into the furnace. The question people ask is, why did Yitzchak think that Esav was a good guy? He was a murderer. So Esav presented it that, oh, he killed Nimrod because, you know, he was getting rid of evil. He was destroying this evil person, the enemies of Hashem. But really, Esav wanted, Nimrod had a special garment that Esav coveted. And so he killed him because he wanted the garment. And so it had nothing to do with pure motives. He just was... So in a certain way, that's what it's saying over here. His killing of Yeravim, he needs to be punished for that. Even though Yeravim was evil, but he didn't do it because he was evil. He did it because he enjoyed it. There are people that... what they're doing isn't wrong, but the question is their motive for doing it. And so over here, his motive for destroying Yeravim, he had no right to do it, especially if he was no better. Verse 8, Bishnas Esther Mishay Shana La'asa Melech Yudah Malach Olah Ben Basha Yisrael Besircha. He was king 2 years, and he was no better, and this is what happened. V'ikshar Olav Avdo Zimri Sar Maxis HaRekev. Now, almost never happened in Yehuda, but the 10 tribes, the monarchs started becoming like the Gentile monarchs, where they had these, like a coup took place, where one of the officers went and killed his killed the president or killed the king, and the one who did it was somebody named Zimri, and he was in charge of the horses. The horses were the big power in those days. That was like the tanks of today. the horsepower in the army. That was a very important role. If you controlled the horses, that was the key to the army's success. So v'hubesirtza shosa shikur beis arza asher al beis besirtza. Now, what was the king doing when somebody was rebelling? And so it says he was a shikur. So we get the idea of what kind of king he was. He was drinking away, you know. So it's no verse 10. V'yavu zimri v'akev v'misei v'shnatzesim v'sheva l'asa melech Yehuda v'yimlok takta. So this is actually the third dynasty. So we had the first dynasty, which was Yeravam, and he was the original dynasty, and he caused the Jewish people to sin. And then we had Baasha, who came on the scene to try to fix it up and was no better. And so now Zimri comes along, and he goes and he strikes down Baasha. And we're going to see whether he does any better. So, we see this king of Baasha's son is described as drinking, being totally drunk. Shosa shikur. That's what it literally means. He was drinking drunk. I don't know how you drink drunk. Shosa shikur. Shosa means he's drinking, but he drunk himself drunk. Maybe, you know, he was, that's what he did as king. Okay. 11. If he malka shifta al kisa he cast cold base basha lo hisha lo masha mikir. Now he wiped out the previous king. He didn't even leave a water post. He didn't leave any male offspring. Not only did he wipe out the king, he wiped out the king and the king's friends and anybody that had anything to do with the king, anybody's advisors. That's how total did he wipe out the king. And so it's almost like the whole new administration that had come to replace the evil administration really carried a big burden, because since they wiped out Yeravam, and since they saw how bad it was, and then they came to power and did exactly the same thing, there was no excuse for that. And so Zimri came in a very short time and wiped them out. 12. V'yashmei Zimri es kol beis Baasha k'dvar Hashem asher dibar Baasha b'yad Yehu Navi. And this was all predicted. They were all warned. El kol achatos Baasha v'chatos Allah. This was because of the sins of Baasha and Allah. Asher hiktu v'asher hiktu es Yisrael. What's interesting is the Jewish people here isn't described as doing wrong. The kings are described as doing wrong. We're going to see. Sometimes you had good kings and bad people, and sometimes you had good people and bad kings, and sometimes good people and good kings and bad people. In other words, there's always a combination. But over here, it's just describing the leaders as pushing the people bad. What's interesting is it throws in this word behevel. Hevel means like, you know, he translates it as false gods in this book, but hevel means like nothingness.
Here it says vanities.
Vanity. Vanity is actually more accurate. That's what in Solomon says, hevel havolim omer. We talked about him drinking, you know, like he was just like, what was the purpose of wiping out the old king to be a new king? Well, just to power, enjoyment of power. That was silly, you know, that was hevel. That was like, there was no reason for that violence to do that. 14. And if you want to read about him, you can go to the history books. Now, now here an interesting thing happens, and that is the Jewish people don't have a tolerance for rewarding violence. Zimri thought, rightfully so, that the other king was a bad king, and so he got rid of him. He assassinated him. And we don't appoint someone to be the next king just because he assassinated the old king. That's not our way. We had that with King David, that the one that had killed Saul wanted to be rewarded and thought that David would reward him for that. We don't reward violent people. That you don't get a prize for that. And so Zimri thought that, you know, he got rid of this other king. So, you know, we look at it, he's a murderer. That's the last person in the world we're going to appoint to be the king. But he thought in his mind, if he got rid of the old king, so he would be king. So he was a king a total of 7 days in Tirzah. And meanwhile, the military was still fighting the Plishtim. They were still on the siege there. and they got word. They found out that Zimri did this rebellion. And he had wiped out the king. And the people decided that they needed a new person. Zimri, the murderer, was not going to be the new king. They appointed somebody named Omri. And he was one of the warriors, one of the people that was helping the fight against the Philistines. We always like warriors in the Middle East, you know, generals, people that are... the job of the king is to provide security, to protect the country. And if somebody is willing to fight against our enemies, we figure they can be our leader. Unfortunately, it doesn't always go hand in hand. In other words, just because somebody's capable of being a fighter doesn't mean that they're the best politician and leader. And so it doesn't hurt. Some of our best, you know, presidents were people that were, and some of our worst presidents were people that were generals or the, but in Israel, because the, I think it's difficult to know, it's been, a challenge is how do you know that a person is a committed person or that they really believe in what they're doing? So when somebody risks their lives to go into battle for us, so that already says a lot about a person. You know, as you can elect somebody like that, you know, whether you like their politics or not, they care about the Jewish people. They went to war. They gave up their lives. They risked their lives for them. And so that's why people like Sharon and Begin and other people, because they, whether you liked them or not, they cared about Israel. The newer breed of the, who was the last one, the lawyer that's busy with all the lawsuits in Israel. What's his name? You know what I'm talking about? The
I know who you mean, but I can't
think of it. No, that was the... That was the president. The last prime minister before Bibi was... what?
Olmert.
Yeah, Olmert. So again, I don't know him personally, and who knows if he was as bad as they say he was. You know, there's all kinds of cases. But he didn't have a record of being someone that was a... gave his life, you know, was a leader, was a... We just know that he was a politician who was in the place when they, you know, there's something too being I'm just mentioning over here why they would make Omri, the king, because he was a Tsar Sabah. He was a general. He was someone who had, cared about the Jewish people to protect us in battle. And so, therefore they had hoped, now, this person had murdered the old king, he would be the one to lead them now in this difficult time. 17. So he came back from the battle of the Palestinians and came back to deal with the one who had murdered the old king. 18. Now Zimri thought that they would be so happy to reward him for assassinating the old king. He sees that they're sieging the city. He went into the king's palace. Now it says he kind of lit it on fire and he died. We don't know if he committed suicide. We don't know who did the fire over here. It's a bloody mess. But basically, this the one that Zimri that murdered the previous king only lasted a week. Now, an interesting thing is why did he only last a week? 19, Al-Khatasov, because of his sins, Ashechata Lasso Sarah Bene Hashem. He had sinned to do evil in God's name. He was only king for a week, and yet he did evil in Hashem's eyes. Lachas Bederech Yeravim. Because, he saw the other king was Shikr, he was gonna be Shikr. He wanted to do the same thing. Asher Asa Lahaktias Yisrael. So the motives are always important. You know, when somebody wants to, replace the old person in power, is it because they want the power or is it because they want to fix things? What's scary is, like, you know, we have this guy like John Edwards, or we have a, and you find out afterwards that some of these people, you know, his wife was dying from cancer and he was, had, you know, things that he was taking, you know, the, but we'd like to think that these were good people and they were going to help us and they were going to lead our country with morals and values and caring, and they were people that, again, it just, you want people that are caring and concerned and dedicated, and it's, when they get in there, just because they want to be the ones with the power, it's really scary. And that's what happened here, was that, the people, weren't public servants, they were people that wanted to enjoy the powers of government, and they didn't last long. Hashem didn't really tolerate them. We're going to see that there were kings that were good kings. Some of them were more religious, some were less religious, but at least they were leaders. At least they cared about the country. They tried to fix things. These kings were all in the mold of Yeravam and continued what they were doing. And so therefore, in a very short time, these kings didn't last. And the plot, you know, he had to have done this is like a spy thriller, like the Hebrew word for the plot is a kesher. Anybody know what a kesher is?
A knot.
A knot. A knot is like intertwined, like the word that he made, what does he call it, his rebellion. But basically he had to have had inside people that gave away the king's whereabouts and allowed him to sneak in and to kill him and to seize the power. And there was a bunch of intrigue here. It's like a spy thriller kind of thing. But you won't read about it in this book. It's just telling you, if you want to read about it, you can go over it. What's interesting is that usually it tells you if you want to read about the accomplishments of the king. But here it says if you want to read about how he did it, if you want to read about the plot, the Kishra Asher Kosher, Halohim Sivim, I'll say for Divrei Yom HaMalchus, or that's written over there. I don't even know why they would bother writing that. I understand why you write about the king. He conquered this many cities. He did this. He did that. But here it tells us about his rebellion. You can read about the rebellion over there. So, 21. Oz Yichala Ka'am Yisrael L'chatzi Am Hayu Achwe Tivni. So now that they got rid of Zimri, so you had, it's a challenge when you don't have a clear line of succession, when you don't have the descendants of David. It was was the next child in line, but the 10 tribes now was really up for grabs. So we have the new king that had come back from war, who was the general, that was Imri, and then Oz Yichalak Am Yisrael Lachatzi, and then the people divided. And this also happens. The kingdom was a breakaway, and now there's a breakaway from the breakaway. Half the people divided. Chatziam hayu achri tivni ben ginas lahamlicho v'chatzi achri imri. So you had two big parties. One side wanted Timni, and one side wanted Umri. So who's going to win here? 22. V'chazak am asher achri imri yasam asher achri tivni. Apparently the Imri side was stronger. And they slowly won the popular support. Ben Gideon, for Yamas Timni Yimlak Imri, and Timni died. We don't know how he died, but Imri becomes the king. And so now we start the next of the big dynasties in the 10 tribes. Again, the first dynasty was Yeravam, and they had the one that wiped out Yeravam from Basha that was no better than Yeravam. And then we have this bloodshed, which was until that time was unheard of for assassinations to take place. And we said that nobody was interested in putting the assassin in power. That's not the Jewish way. We don't reward an assassin. And then eventually it was decided that Imri should be the next king. 23. And this all took place during the 21st year of Asa, Malach Yuda, Malach Imri, Yisrael, Shtayim, Esrei, Shanim, Etzirtza, Malach Shei Shanim. And it mentions that he was king in 6 years. 25. The Yikin is Sahar Shomer, Me'e Shemer, Be'Kirakayim, Be'Kikrim Kesef. Now, today we talk a lot about this of Yehuda and Shomron, the era, Judea and Sumeria. So, when did Sumeria become a seat of the Jewish people? So this was in the times of Omri. He kind of, he wanted to make a break from the government hadn't gone well, the seat of power hadn't gone well. And so they needed a change, they needed to try a different spot. So, acquired a new area, on Mount Shomron, and he got it from somebody named Shemer. And he bought it for 2 talents of silver, like the Louisiana purchase. Ve'even esahar v'yikra shem ha'ir, shavana al shem shemer, adon yahar shomron. They called it after the name of the lord of that area, whose name was Shemer. And it became called Shomron. That's the name, of the new capital. And, the question was, what kind of king would he be? 25. So unfortunately, like I said, Vayasa Imri Hara Bnei Hashem. Now it doesn't say that he was like Yeravim. He was, it's possible to be bad in a whole new way. In other words, there's more than one way to be bad. He was evil in the eyes of Hashem. But you're a Mikol HaShafonim. And he was actually worse than those that were in front of him. 26, and those that were in front of him were pretty bad. And it was a similar, even though he had a new city and he tried to approach it from a different way, it was really more of the same. 27, so we don't need to hear anything else about him. And we can read about that in the book of Kings of Israel. 28, and he lied down with his father. And now we get to a king, Achav, who's his son. And Achav, we're going to hear a little more about. Like, really today, we went through chick-chock, you know, some of the bad kings. The lesson that I think we just have to take from it is that, when a person takes over a position from someone else, he has to seek to improve it, and to do better than the person who was there beforehand. And if a person, merits to do that so he shouldn't just try to, sometimes there's a chance to review if someone else was doing wrong to do better. And unfortunately, these kings were interested in the power, and they didn't improve on the previous kings, and therefore Hashem had very little patience for them, and they continued on the slide of pushing the people away. And now we're up to Achav, who we're going to hear about. He's he was the king of the 10 tribes. We're going to see different opinions about Achav. Achav ended up being a bad king, but he had a lot of potential. We'll see the earlier kings. There was not much to say about them. They continued on in the ways of the evil kings. Okay, we'll stop here.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.